so we sit gratefully here for the sunlight, the starlings, the great food, the good company, and the space to renew body, mind, and spirit. And we thank you for our good work. So today we will share about good work. Amen. So I've asked a couple people from the staff to start us off today and probably involve us in a conversation that would be hopefully helpful for everybody. And that anyone who's attending the session who is on temporary, permanent, part-time, long-term, all the various ways that you can be staff here, please feel free to add to the observations. What I asked folks to think about was why they're here, why they wound up volunteering to work in this place, to give of their labors, what spiritual or other needs they feel they're feeding by being here and giving their work. And beyond that, not a lot of leadership. I did put the readings on reserve in the library, and some of these folks have seen them. Didn't get to argue with Terry last night about his response to it, but I'm sure we could probably do a little of that right here. Mm-hmm. And I hope some of the rest of you got to look at the chapter that I gave you, and there's lots more of that in the library. So why don't we, since we're a small group anyway, introduce ourselves to each other? Just a little quickly, like even y'all. All right? I'm Katie, and I'm convening this chocolate curry water conversation this week.
My name is Claudia, and I'm from New York, and I've been working in the kitchen here. I hope you do it.
Quite your accent.
Thank you.
I'm Katie Stephanides, and I'm from Lynch.
And I'm Steve Stephanides, and I'm also from Lynch.
What
a coincidence. Yeah. Bill Hudak from Tacoma.
Andy Lane.
Dolly Cunningham from Bill Slavker from Tacoma.
I'm Carl Opker from Tacoma.
Jim Christofferson, Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Dorothy Christofferson from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Terry Lee, I lived in Vancouver, Washington before I came here, and I've been here for a year today, serving the village as fire chief and head driver.
Happy anniversary.
I'm Kari Strickland. Work as a staff coordinator here, and I've been here a little over a year, and will be here a little over another year.
I'm Stacy, and I lived here for 2 years in November, and started out as a cook, and I'm working the last year as a program coordinator, and I'll stay here through next spring. Before that, I was from Northern Minnesota.
I'm Nancy from Starbuck, Minnesota.
I'm Tammy Meinold from Minnesota.
I'm Eve from Tacoma.
I'm Diane, and I came in yesterday to begin a year here.
Where are you from?
Friday Harbor, Washington.
Oh.
I'm Bev from Issaquah.
I'm Mark from Issaquah.
I'm Tim Gustafson from Minneapolis. I was on staff here in the mid-80s, and I lived for a couple of years in New York.
I'm Volker Greifenhagen, and I'm from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada.
I'm
Cassandra,
and I'm from Shoreline,
Seattle. Norman Berg from Minneapolis, area, Minnesota.
And you're also on staff, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else on staff who didn't mention that? I'm here. Okay, well, you guys feel ready to kick this off?
Sure.
Okay.
I came here as a guest a couple of times, and then I did a short-term stint as my wife and I considered whether or not we, with our three children, would want to live here. And after being a guest in both summer and winter and being on short-term staff, we decided, yeah, let's do that. And we planned it and actually had it 3 years in the incubation to accomplish or complete things we wanted to do. And I would say that I think the primary motivation in our coming here was the benefit to my children. The school here is part of the Chelan School District. This past school year, the high school, which is seventh graders and some juniors and a senior, had five students. And the elementary school, which had second grade to sixth grade, one of each, had five students, each with great teachers, each sharing a great teacher assistant. So I think when I think of what are my responsibilities in life, I put father and husbanding right up there. And I said, this is the coolest place to pull this off. it just is. And I came up here, and I'm having a blast. It's a wonderful environment with great people, great scenery, great food. It's like, why not live here? So that's where I came.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My family's been coming to Holden all my life. I was 5 months when I first came. Obviously, I don't remember that, but... So it's been a kind of like a family cabin kind of thing. It's where we always went on our vacations. Once my brother went off to college, we didn't quite make it up all the time. So when I went to college, I decided to come for a summer and volunteer on staff. Then I wasn't here for about 5 years, and it hit me. I was in a time in my life between graduating from school and did some volunteer work with AmeriCorps Vista in Seattle, and it felt like the best next step, not only for career development, staff coordination, the interest in nonprofits, but also it has been such an important place to come from my family, that knowing that I could help sustain that for all the families that come all the time was an important part of my decision to come, knowing that this place doesn't exist without volunteers. It's not possible. Knowing that I had some skills that I could offer and some skills that I could learn, along with a whole higher part of what this place encompasses, being a place where you live and work and rest and play with the same people, but also being a place that's centered in something a lot deeper than what I have found in communities I've lived in outside of Holden. So being able to build up that strength while you're here, that religious base, the faith base strength, and also building up skills. So once I leave here, there's so many different things I'll take away. And a common saying of people that leave staff, which I believe is true, is I've learned so much and I won't realize what I've learned for years and years, and it'll pop up throughout the rest of my life, all the things that I've learned being here. So I believe that to be true. I know I'm learning a lot, and I'll figure it out later.
Before coming to Holden in the fall of 1998, was just prior to that, I had been living in Seattle working or serving with Lutheran Volunteer Corps. And for those of you who are not familiar with Lutheran Volunteer Corps, you agree to live for a year with 4 to 5 other individuals and live simply and work for justice and attempt to build community. And within that context, I was fascinated by what made community crumble and what made it thrive and how important it was. And I was curious as to how I could incorporate that into my life in more ways. And while I was in the Lutheran Volunteer Corps, I worked at an AIDS housing program in Seattle where we were creating housing for people living with AIDS. And the reason why these people came into our housing program was because of an illness, but the community that was created went beyond the needs, medical or psychosocial needs. There's a community that these people often considered their first family for some time because they had been isolated or kicked out of their faith communities or own families. And so I was intrigued by that aspect of building community as well. And I value having friends of all ages, and I wanted to leave Lutheran Volunteer Corps and find a place where I could be with both the 6-year-old and the 8-year-old at the same time and people my age. And while I was in Lutheran Volunteer Corps, there were some houses throughout the country that had people that were not in their 20s, their early 30s, but in my house we were all recent college grads. And so I was looking for a place to come and experience a multi-generational community. And at the point that I left Lutheran Volunteer Corps, I had just canceled my med school applications. I thought that all my life that I was going to be a doctor, and that was the way that I could serve in this world, and that I could use my knowledge of the body and enthusiasm for science and medicine to help and serve others in a rural area. And during that year of working in the AIDS housing program, I had this revelation or aha moment that I wanted to go to seminary. I felt led in that direction of providing more pastoral support and spiritual support to people versus the medical. So when I left Lutheran Volunteer Corps, I felt like I needed a place to really discern, is that the best way for me to use my gifts, and is that where I will thrive? And someone was joking with me that, you know, well, of course I'm going to find that I want to go to seminary if I go to, you know, that's the, you know, if I went and lived with doctors for a year, I'd probably say, of course I want to go to medicine, or, you know, go into medicine. But what I've learned here in this community is so valuable to me, to know that a community can come together and worship every single day, and that worship, we gather for a half an hour or hour on any given day, but it shapes our working, it shapes our patterns, our relationships, and that has been exciting for me to be in this place. And when I came here, I thought I was only going to be here for a year, and then found that I really loved this place and felt that I had more to learn and more to offer. And so I've stayed for another year and plan to stay for one more winter. And at the first, when I first came here and started working as a cook, it was something new for me. It was exciting, and it was a risk to feed, you know, hundreds of people. I never knew that I was able to do that. That wasn't so hard, but what's hard now is trying to make a meal for 3 or 4 people. I usually still err on the larger side. But after that, working in the kitchen, I started to evaluate what could I give and what did I need to learn from this community still. And the program coordinator position seemed like the perfect fit for me, and I can still say that today. And sometimes I forget that I'm working because I enjoy it so much. And when Katie was planning this discussion, I was thinking about that. That when you get to the point where work, part of your, I mean, there are business aspects and letter writing and coordinating schedules and things that I have to do, but there's other aspects of my job that I get to interact with so many amazing people. And I forget that that's work often because it's so enjoyable. And so I think that if I can, wherever I am once I leave Holden, if I can find that place where there's moments in my work that I forget that I'm working because I'm forgetting that I'm getting a paycheck for it, I hope that I
can find myself in that place again. So.
A lot of wisdom here. Let me just ask, Kari, you said, I know I've learned something, but I'll figure it out when I get out of here. Which I think is sort of the case for most of us through wonderful or huge experiences in our lives. It takes a while after it's over for us to settle, for you to look around and say, this was going on. But despite having said that, you've been here long enough to make some observations about, you said that building up faith strength, a sort of specific kind of strength, faith strength, was one of the things that both drew you here and that is still real for you here, I presume. How does, it seems to me that this is a perfect place to use your work as your spiritual life. And is that real? And when does that not feel real? I mean, there's probably moments. After all, work sometimes is just work. I don't think I asked a very good question.
Well, I do a lot of work with volunteers, obviously, staff coordination. But specific, I guess part of the way I look at Holden is an opportunity for everyone to come and share their gifts. So, which isn't said of any place that you wanted to volunteer. I don't turn people away usually. How did I say this? When I receive an application and something in my mind says, oh, this person might need a little extra supervision, or maybe they need a job that isn't really here now, but maybe we could make a job that would use their gifts the best. So it's a different, because if we didn't do that and we would set up walls and not invite people that can benefit from what Holden can give. Mm-hmm. So, in a way, it's offering a space and a place for people that aren't offered that space other places. Sorry.
It's a lot to offer.
Yeah. Which takes a lot more work as well, but it's the kind of work that Holden is willing to put forth, where I think a lot of places aren't, and unfortunately that then puts walls in front of a lot of people. I don't know if that answered.
Why then? Either of you guys want to say anything? I do want to say, if Janet wants to add anything, anywhere along the way. Janet, I forget your title. You're something concho here. What is this? Coordinator of the whole day thing? Or
I cross back into the dining hall. I'm the director.
She's the director. Yes. Some kind of concho. And if anybody else who's worked here wants to pipe in, please do.
In regards to the spiritual nature, I think it's, there are other places in the world where you experience this, but that you are living with the people that you work with. And I grew up with a mother who was an artist, and my dad framed all of her artwork, and that was his hobby, but the artwork was my mom's career, and I just assumed that parents worked together, that that's what people did. And if you take that to a larger scale, I see people living together and working together here. And that isn't always easy. I mean, sometimes you have to say, I need to step back from my work role in the village, and I need to be heard or I need to listen to others without that hat on. Mm-hmm. And depending on what work area you are in, that might be more challenging from one day to the next. But I also think that there's great benefit in being able to be yourself and express your faith and express your doubts in a community, and then also be supported in your work aspect and knowing that your work ties into who you are as a spiritual person and your faith. And that, I mean, I've talked to people before that are maybe in a more, I don't like using the word secular, but where it's not appropriate to talk about your faith and how that ties to your work. And just the struggles of not being able to be fully themselves and have to hide something back of why they're a teacher. I remember talking to a woman who was an interpreter at a school for the deaf in Washington, and she said, it was a school for the deaf and hard of hearing, and it was, since it was a government school, she could not share her faith, yet that was what brought her to that work. And I found sadness in that was the key thing, but she couldn't use words to describe that to others. And so I think at Holden, you're not shunned for sharing both aspects, the faith and the work.
I'd like to add something. I'm sorry, I came a little bit late. Somebody said something like this, but I was just having a conversation yesterday with someone about our application process. And
the volunteer application process.
Pardon me?
The volunteer
application. Yeah, especially for our longer-term staff. And they're asked some questions that are fairly pointed about faith and spiritual challenges that they're facing currently. And this person is saying, this isn't an application for a job. I mean, you can't ask those kinds of questions. And I said, you're not applying for a job. You're applying to be a part of a community. And so that's kind of the hard thing for us as a staffing committee, which I serve on with Kari, to do. You look at these applications and you look at these wonderful people you have to look at what is the balance of a community. How are people applying to a community? And then you have to balance out also. We have certain needs of jobs that need to be filled. There are people that need certain skills. But yet we're an open community that we want to be open to people. But we do have specific sorts of things that we need to look for, like a mechanic or a plumber or a nurse or a computer person, people that have some skills already. But yet they're coming to be a part of the community.
As she talks about spirituality here, or the faith, it's my experience that it's broad. It's everything from atheist, agnostic, to Norwegian Lutherans. But evidently there's a lot of people here who are that way. So I want to say that, and it occurred to me that the book by Studs Terkel, Working, in his book, he starts with, this book is about violence to the body, to the spirit, to the mind.
I read the quote.
Okay, because it's about working.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is an accurate description of work for most people in North American society. But I would say that is not accurate for Holden Village and the people who live here, and by the way, we work here. I see it totally different. It's a whole different experience.
When you said what you just said, Janet, it seemed to me what was unsaid was the struggle that you feel sometimes in having to set aside an application. This person does not have a skill we need right now, one of the many skills. You didn't say that, but you were sort of saying that. Is that part of
it? That's part of it. And also, we use language around here like, is this the time in your life that you can serve at Holden? Perhaps financially someone can't do it right now. Perhaps their family situation is such that it's not the right time. Mm-hmm. The assumption is that there probably is a time in your life when you consider a Fulton Village. But the assessment is now the time. And we as a staffing committee talk about those sorts of things too. And yeah, right now we are pretty full for our winter staff, except for we need a mechanic and a plumber and electrician and all the skill things. But so if you came and you're a great cook, can you be a mechanic?
Yes, right. We've got enough great cooks.
I'd like to follow on the timing issue, because 20 years ago my husband first decided that he would like to spend a year in community at Holden, and he wanted to be village carpenter, and it was not the time. We couldn't do it. We had gone through a custody battle. There were incredible expenses that the stipend just simply couldn't handle. So we waited 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now he's on Social Security. You can do it.
That's the solution. I know there's other staff who come in. Feel free to speak up.
And former staff.
And former staff, that's right. Man who sells me popcorn. You love your work.
I've never done it before. It's a very immediate way of serving people.
I'd be interested, I'm making a pretty big assumption, but what people who have left Holden have benefited, and it's probably changed their framework of ideas about work. But I'd be interested in hearing people that have maybe served on staff here before, what their experiences of work outside of this village has been since that time.
Very good. I need to teach this.
Yes. I've worked here a couple of different times, but last summer I was a cook in the kitchen for a month or so. And just eating the food at Holden and also cooking the food at Holden, you realize that there's definitely, like, if you put a lot of spirit and work and just a lot of care into it, it tastes a whole lot better. And you also feel a whole lot better about making it, about eating it. And then comparing that to going to college and eating food from the cafeteria that comes straight from Food Services of America or Sysco or something, it's a whole lot, it doesn't give you nearly as much energy as the person eating it, or probably as the cooks making it either. So, definitely a relationship between the spirit.
I was on staff here 4 years ago. I was the snack bar queen. I don't know if I ever get to be queen again. But I wore an ice cream bucket on my head during the parade. I love that. But I think it can help one see specialness in the mundane in ordinary life. And one of my very favorite parts of working here is doing dishes, and the fact that everybody does dishes, from Janet to a person who's here for a week volunteering or 3 weeks, you're all in the dish pit together, and that is such a great model for leadership. And I happen to be working in a place now where the directors do direct service with the people that I work with, and there's something about that that's so leveling and so grounding, that there isn't so much hierarchy that, oh, that's beneath me, I can't do that. I'm not going to sort your trash because I'm paid enough so I don't have to. But bringing that paradigm with you into the workplace when you are a director, to say, hey, I'll take my turn doing the dirty work. That's something that's very Holden-esque, and it does happen other places, and it's nice to be able to recognize that.
I was on staff here in 82 and 83, a little bit in 84, for summers. And then the event spent about 11 years in graduate school after that. and started teaching that about 5 years ago. And my first teaching position was at a small liberal arts college that was church-related, but and so I was, of course, hoping for a kind of sense of community that had the faith grounding and everything, where work would tie in real directly, and unfortunately it didn't happen for me there because of several reasons, but one of the reasons was that the community was not a particularly open and welcoming as a very conservative religious tradition. And that was a great frustration coming into that experience, having been to hold it. And then finding a community that could possibly have had those positive aspects to it and that didn't. Since then, I'm now teaching at a huge public university. And so I find myself now up against some of those questions. I mean, one reason I wanted to teach literature is because I think there's a lot of spirituality issues to discuss in literature. But those discussions have to happen differently at a public university than at a church-related liberal arts college. So that's a challenge for me, and yet I'm finding it to be much more satisfying in the public sector than it was in that particular religious institution.
Mm-hmm. Now let me just ask something on those of you who've never worked on staff here, volunteered here. How many of you have pictured doing it while you've been here? Raise your hands. Come on.
Let's see.
I'll take the name.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I guess it's...
I would just assume that many, if not most, guests who come here and teaching staff who get to volunteer just a little bit but do this other kind of weirder thing have considered being part of the staff here. Why? Why do we consider it? Why is it so universal that we consider it? Anybody?
Close to heaven on earth.
As in heaven, so to hold it. Is that the sense of heaven on earth? Yes. Anybody else? Related to what you leave at home.
Maybe. The simplification piece. The simplification, the holistic piece. Much of what is so difficult, I think.
For all the things we don't miss when we're here. I mean, I'm just so struck by the absence of ringing phones and how much it means to me to not have phones ringing around me. It's incredible.
Well, y'all been talking about positive, the good things about working here, working anywhere where you're happy and satisfied. And I had the experience of working for 10 or more years in a place where I was not happy and satisfied, and locked into because of situations, and that's terribly hard on your health and your mental being.
Right. How many people have been in that situation, whether for short or long time? Okay. So there are simple, a couple simple things, a dozen of them have been said by staff already that are present at one and not at the other, or vice versa. I mean, the whole notion that you brought up of, I just was raised thinking that parents worked together. And that Terry started out by saying one of his major motivations was for his kids to come here and have them educated here. That the familial support that this place represents is pretty unmatched and almost anything I've ever seen, really. And it's the proof is just watching the children and how they just come into themselves and shine. They're really very full by the time they leave here. More ways than one, I guess.
Well, and I would say one of the first things I tell staff when we do the little staff orientation is how Holden is known and known for the hospitality that is all around. And part of it is to say, we would like you to also be hospitable. Part of it is a permission to reach out to people because you meet people so fast here and it goes deeper faster than it than I found it outside of Holden. And so you had mentioned that something that exists here that doesn't exist out there that could if you brought that out, but it's a risk to start a conversation and keep it going with someone you don't know that well outside. People sometimes, I feel, have a vision of Holden of everyone that comes to Holden is perfect and would never steal anything, would never do anything bad, and would, all this stuff. So maybe there's a sense of a kind of a safety, and I would say that for the most part, I would hope that that is true, but I also would like to believe for the most part that's true for a lot of people outside of Holden too, but there's a fear that we get from outside influences and media that no one should be trusted and don't share too much because you never know what that person will do with that information. But I think that's part of life is sharing yourself with other people because that's what makes the connections and the friendships and makes each people more accountable to each other, which builds community as well. I have some friends visiting and they're on the second floor of a lodge and I came out of something yesterday and I saw their window open, so I yelled up their name and I didn't hear them, a guest was walking by and she said, I said, oh, I guess that's not going to work, I'm going to have to climb the stairs. And she goes, oh, well, you could throw some rocks at the window. And I said, no, I'm too good of friends with the person that would have to fix it. So there's sort of a connection because you know people because you've reached out and you've gotten to know them. So it does exist here, but I think part of that is because people are given permission to have that exist here, but I think it could exist outside of Holden as well.
Sure.
We risked it.
I have to believe that there's some tasks that, I mean, we do here in other places that wouldn't be enjoyable if you had to do them yourself all the time. So,
yeah.
You know, I've heard dish team and I've heard, you know, the idea of it being more simplified here. But there are things that are more labor intensive. Like in the winter, we heat most of our buildings by wood. Well, if one person had to heat all the buildings every day, that would really wear on them. But as a community in the winter, we take turns stoking the different buildings. And with that, if you forget to stoke, you forget, you affect a whole community. You have school children who sit with their winter coats on because the school building is cold, because you forgot to wake up at 6 and light the fire. So there's this interdependence. And I've experienced here in many other aspects of you know, as Kari just said, you know who's fixing the window. You know who's fixing your meal. You know who's supplying you with power and making sure that we have electricity. And whenever I go out of the village on vacation, sometimes I don't know who's picking up my garbage. And maybe I treat them a little bit differently because of that. I'm not so careful in my sorting of garbage or different things. And I feel bad that that's the case. And I hope that when I leave here that I can take the opportunity to have those others that supply me with services and goods known in my life. But there are a lot of the labor-intensive things, but within community, it's almost a gift. I mean, I enjoy being on this team because I'm there with other people. And there are days that I don't want to wash the dishes, but when these activities are done in community, it's amazing to see what can get done and what your role is in getting something done.
Mm-hmm. Tara?
Well, I would like to go back to what you asked about being in work or having been in work that was unhealthy or unspiritually developing. And in your handout that you gave the other day on work, they had a thing there which I just wanted to mention and then comment on. It talks about don't be a victim of the victim mentality. And they go on to say where the victim mentality says, my life is essentially at the mercy of vast, powerful forces out there and beyond my control. I'm at the mercy of, and then they have a bunch. And some of them say, my history, my upbringing, my genes, or my heritage, my mate, my partner, my husband, or my wife, the economy, the times we live in, the social structure, the politicians, the large corporations, or the rich. And there's others that they list here. And I that's where sort of what intrigues me is how I have been a victim and not hopefully a victim of the victim mentality, like where I had to pay my dues, where, you know, I was in the job that, you know, was scatologically inappropriate. But, you know, in fact, I once said in a group, I said, what was the worst job I ever had? You know, and we all had worse jobs. Mm-hmm. And why'd you do it? You know, it was for the money, it was to pay the dues, it was da-da-da, you know? So how can we spiritually break out of that? And can we? I always find it intriguing, because I'm a victim at times, but am I a victim of a victim mentality that says I can't break out of that? And I think at times we are victims of social structures or economic or others that are mentioned in this material.
It seems like a lot of times it's maybe not the job, but it's how, like you were saying, like how we think about it and the community or lack of community that goes around it, or like just the atmosphere. And maybe I was thinking of ways that we can bring like these jobs that are done at Holden to the outside world. And maybe not the exact job, but the community that goes around it, or the spirituality that goes around it. And maybe that means like living where you work, or at least in a close nearby, or really getting to know the people that you work with, or I don't know, setting up sort of a ritual or a space for yourself before after you work.
Yeah, I look at the middle quotation up here. What most influences health is a work situation where people feel in control of their lives. And I would say my experience is pouring that out. For me, that some, maybe at Holden, the sense of shared ownership, the community, all that, it really gives people that the sense of control. Whereas it's very possible in many work situations to feel completely controlled, or at least largely controlled, by your boss or supervisor or the situation, the economic realities, whatever those are. So then the question for me becomes, I think what you were getting at is, when you find yourself in that sort of work situation, what sort of resources do you draw on? What space do you have to do some of these things that we know are healthy and positive? What do people find? What do you do?
Excellent question.
How do you get some sense of control when you may not really be able to have much?
Steve?
Maybe one modification of that. Thinking about Holden, our church is going through a self-study because we're going to call a new pastor, and we went through a book, and one of the wonderful things was that worship was characterized as a place where we imagine. Okay. And one of the strengths of Holden, of course, is that every evening there's a reimagination of the work situation, which doesn't happen even at a church-sponsored school. You know, I mean, does the faculty, for instance, worship together? If they did, perhaps there wouldn't be the exclusive nature of the faculty climate. I was wondering if we could modify that middle one and say we could
most positively influence health is a work situation where people feel that God is in control of their lives. In other words, if you believe that the work that you're doing is a vocation in the sense of calling, I don't mean this making in some high, large sense, but just in the sense of splitting wood or carrying water as part of your vocation, then you realize that you're doing work that you're called to do. And if that's the case, then you have the greatest comfort you could possibly have. I mean, even if you think of someone like a Bonhoeffer in a concentration camp working as a pastor, that's his vocation. So his work is, he's healthful and he's spreading health in the darkest kind of situation. So that just sort of jumped out at me when you said that. I thought, wow, you could change that in that way. And then we have, and that maybe is what Holden has to, it's a place where you can imagine, where you can visualize God as being that which is moving people to do these things, that has moved people to come here and do these things, and that all of this work is ennobled, and all the people that do it are also ennobled, and the people that come here. So, yeah.
Well, as heaven on earth, Holden has about as many of the pieces together as it possibly can show.
You work together, you worship together, you live together. You extend open arms. You
argue.
Well, we haven't even talked about that yet, but it's assumed you argue.
But it is another piece, and also that the work is not tied into the cash nexus here.
That's,
and then how important is that?
I think it's significant.
I think that's, it's a really good point to bring up. I can't believe how cheap the popcorn is. And every time I pull out a dollar bill, he goes, whoa, so much money. And he gives me change. What is this? The imagine thing, I think, is very key. To invite people wholly into their work is to invite their gifts of imagination, creativity. Out there in the world, it, for some reason, has become canon that people's imaginations and creativity get in the way, at least at certain levels. And the levels that were allowed to be creative get so removed, and, a huge gap between them and other regular workers, their imagination also gets stultified, I would submit. Their creativity starts going down the tube because they're equally not connected, whether it's to God or to other people or to the entire notion of the enterprise. So what people are asking are, what kind of controls can we have out there about our work? I think you have a lot of control, and I think you speak to it when you say, I've been a victim, but hopefully not of the victim mentality. I mean, work is, that's part of the minefield of work, is deal with it. You have a choice. Okay, if you don't like this one, go get a different job. If you don't like working for, an arms development company, then bite the bullet, go somewhere else, train yourself in something else. And, frankly, a lot of the people in this room have sort of automatic privilege that some people not in this room don't have. So that you are given opportunities that many people in our culture do not have, automatically, just by walking in. Color of your skin, your health, the fact that both legs move, you can see, you've already had an education from day one, from parents who care, who started you on a faith basis, which is just about the biggest gift you can have to support a life. So, Where does your responsibility lay with all those gifts? And put on top of that, you're a U.S. citizen. Just the only thing that everybody else in the world wants to be.
Unless you're Norwegian.
I keep learning these things.
I'm going to go back a little bit on what you were talking about, the stuff, and also that. I think part of why this life is authentic for me is because it is an expression of my faith daily, that our rituals, our daily rituals, are a reflection of what it means to be Christian. And saying hello, I'm your body, and hello every day. Mm-hmm. I really think that teaches us in very little ways about how to be faithful, about what it means to live and die and live again. And also, you said to raise our arguments, it's about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. To live in this place, there are arguments or disagreements, but we don't see the eye to eye. It's not perfect. By any means. But we face each other at night at the dinner table and at night at the altar. We come. A few years ago, I had an argument with a person during the day, and he waited for me at the door to vespers. He says, I'm not going in there without. That's good. Forgiving one another. Mm-hmm. And that was an extreme example. That doesn't happen all the time. Mm-hmm. But it was a perfect example of what we should be following this. Mm-hmm. And all arguments don't get forgiven. Forgiveness doesn't always, reconciliation doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. I think we have some rituals here that we've honed and developed, and new people come in and we have new ones that help us do those things, that help us live out the little day-to-day aspects of our faith. I think rituals are really important.
Yeah.
You've ruined my idea about heaven on earth.
Reality.
Yes, sorry.
I've heard your personal pastor for 2 years maybe, but 15, 20 years ago, I was meeting with a lot of younger pastors who were in seminary and taking their training, and just shortly out of a new friendship and just out of seminary. And the big word in those days was burnout. We're having clergy burnout. And my response was always along the line of, where's your sense of calling? Where's your sense of community and support? And I think we've all touched on that. If there's a sense of calling, there's refreshment, there's renewal, there's a daily cycle of contact with God and with people. And as you identify with your calling as being to serve those people, to be with those people, identify with those people, it seemed to me burnout was much less likely to happen. Certainly in some cases, I'm sure it did happen anyway, but more often it was because of a disconnection from God and from community.
Well, doesn't traditional work encourage disconnection from God and community?
Traditional work?
Yeah. Because, by traditional work, what I mean by that is, I've heard the expression since I've been up here 24/7. I'm working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I'm reachable by phone or email anytime, any day. And I get a call from work, I jump to it. So working 40 hours a week is a vacation that maybe you're a professional and you don't even think about working less than 50 a week. Or maybe you're in some other thing, a carpenter, and it's like, hey, this is the summer, I can do it 7 days a week. So I would suggest that traditionally in the American workforce right now, we de-emphasize God and we de-emphasize community.
I think that's just creating the vacuum and the increase in spiritual seeking. The 24/7 business is just wearing people out, and they know there's something missing in their lives. the spirituality is taking all kinds of bizarre forms, perhaps, but it's a seeking society right now.
Yeah.
This brings us back to your earlier slight reference to the telephone issue. At one time in my life, I was an insurance claims adjuster, always talking to immediately traumatized people through accidents and mishaps. And it's very interesting that people will say things to you over the phone that they would never say if they were sitting face-to-face with a human being. And at one point with one woman, I finally had to say, I'm sorry, ma'am, I don't have to take this. And I hung up, which is almost, you know, had a supervisor been there, I don't know what would have happened. And she called back and she said, you're right, you don't have to. I'm sorry. There was a rare day when forgiveness does happen. But I do think that the telephone, and now that it's being used 24/7, is fueling that problem in our society.
Well, the email very
short. People will type you things that they wouldn't even say on the phone, which is astounding. One of the ironies of all this is that really good work is 24/7 work. You know what I mean? The perfect vocation is work where, I mean, it's sort of like you have this sort of, you know, you go the furthest distance from it and you come back, but what you've got is something that's the exact mirror image. All of the things that are good have been turned into something evil. Because really good work, you don't think about it. You don't care if you're getting paid for it. You know what I mean? It suits you perfectly. And therefore, you work like a deer browses out in the brush, and you just do it to live in the best sense.
Right back there.
Well, and I keep thinking we're talking about work like that's all of what vocation is, and vocation is really your whole life and how it all fits together. And I keep thinking of what makes it so hard out there to... for most of us to figure out how to feel that congruence every day in what we do for a living and in our home life and our family life. And it's like one of those, for many people, I think people feel like you can't just change one piece of it and then it's all clicking together. You can't just say, well, I don't want to work for Microsoft anymore because I don't like working 70 hours a week, and so I'll be a carpenter or I'll start my own small software business and work 30 hours a week or something and stay home with my child part of the time. Yeah, you have to make the decisions on all different levels. You have to say, well, okay, so we won't own 3 SUVs, and so then you want or won't
just
one. This neighborhood or this neighborhood, or well, it's like a domino effect. You need to care. At least that's. It seems like in our lives, that's sort of been how choices have followed, and we could each be doing different things that would make some other things possible in our lives, but because we want this, we have to give up this. And so it's kind of all the vocation, it seems like, it is the whole of how you live and work and play and parent and recreate and eat.
Right. Yeah, because we're coming to the end, so if you want to say anything.
What Johanna just said, I had, during my senior year of college, was in those trying to break ties with mom and dad or be my own person, and I remember telling my mom, you know, why don't you just put your paintings in a gallery? It would be so easy. And I had sat down and figured out how much money she was making on a single painting if she went to an art fair, and all the time that she spent and all the hours, and I just said, it'd be so much easier. You don't have to put all this work into this. And I was really critical of it, and I feel bad now. But she came back and said, do you realize that your dad and I do this together? Every weekend when we go to an art show, we see our friends, and we may sit in this park all weekend long in the hot summer sun, but the
we love this, and it's not about money, and it's that we get to do this together. And it was just like this huge aha moment that as I was trying to figure out, you know, how our family, my parents said that they would help me with my college education, I was getting defensive that there was a better way, that there would be more money for tuition, and I feel horrible. I mean,
you sit down and write her a letter.
Right. Well, we have talked about that, but just this moment of her saying, this is why this is important, this is my work, and that I can sell the painting to the person, and that some clerk in a gallery isn't selling it. I want to be connected to the person that buys my art, and it doesn't matter how much I make on it at that point. And it was really incredible to see her value of work, and then I think I switched some on my value of work, and I think it still shapes me today what she said that day. So.
I always love what the Bible says about work, that whatever you do, whatever you do, is do it as if working for Jesus, you know? And I think that that's kind of just an equalizer, because our society, our world has all these levels of, you know, what's really valuable work and what's just pittance, you know? But when I think about that verse, it's always a refresher in reference to burnout, too. You know, like, why, whatever work it is that I'm doing, why do I do it? You know, like, Lord, help me this day to do the work that I do for you and to focus on you in this day and to have that as the motive for working. So I don't remember where. I know it's the New Testament, but it just talks about, you know, honoring God with whatever work we do. And I think that's one of the things at Holden Village, is that things are appreciated in that light, and that we can take it, you know, from these mountains to wherever we live, and just, you know, to appreciate other people's work and to focus what task we have on, you know, Jesus Christ and serving, you know, from day-to-day tasks.
Well, that's as good a note to end on as any. We're trying to talk about this week a little bit is bringing these aspects together in our lives, and, you know, what helps that, what gets in the way of that. And maybe just reflecting, well, we've got this wonderful opportunity of being at a place like Holden to reflect on, when we go back, what do we bring that asserts community for ourselves? What do we insert that will spark other people's imagination that they can actually have more of heaven on earth? And so to further that conversation, I'm going to hand out a couple more readings. Of course, there's only 10. but they're also all on reserve in the library, all the readings, and plus the book that Terry was reading from a little earlier. I'd like to shift part of the conversation to social responsibility aspect. And so that these articles are both, they're not articles, they're chapters from books. One of them is a chapter from that book called The Way of Social Action, Social Action. And the other one is a chapter of a book called How Can I Help by Ram Dass, and that's talking about good work. There's a number of books I should have brought. Now, if I get it together by the end of the week, I'll write them down and make a list that are reading in this way, for those of you who want it. But once again, there are 10 copies here. If you live with someone who wants to read this, or close by, or work with someone who wants to read this, share a copy. And I'm really glad that you guys gave of your time this morning. Thank you very much. Thank you.